I am Kat Kahn.
And I am Tanya Rice.
And this is Two Pittas
on a Pod.
Welcome to Two Pittas on a Pod. Thank you for joining us. We are excited to share the musings of a couple of yogis.
We hope you learn, laugh, and enjoy. And we hope you will share your comments or questions. Without further ado.
So, hello, Kat. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Tanya?
I am doing fantastic.
Oh, good.
To a degree. So I think today's topic is maybe a little bit heavier of a topic, but I think it's a very important topic. You and I had talked recently about how heavy the world feels, especially right now in the middle of this pandemic, about trauma awareness.
Yeah, I started thinking about this when my friend Hannah had mentioned she had done a meditation, and it was the premise of it was how we're suffering from a global collective depression because of COVID-19. So that's why I started thinking a lot more about this. And you, I did not know you had such a background in grief studies with yoga and helping with that. So it kind of just naturally occurred, I guess, that we would be talking about this.
We should be, you know, specific for our listeners, because I know you and I got together and talked about this, and like we had created lists and lists and lists, and we could probably talk about this for multiple episodes, but I think we should probably differentiate. Today we're really going to be speaking to specifically mental trauma.
Mm-hmm.
We'll leave physical trauma out of it for now, and we can address physical trauma on another episode.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we have time, once we talk about mental trauma, to slide into grief, we'll add grief today. Otherwise, we'll hold grief off for another episode as well. But I think, like you're talking about, just right now, it's just, there's a lot of people. We know mental illness is on the rise. We know that stress and anxiety, depression are on the rise. You know, substance abuse is on the rise. Divorce is on the rise. Like, there isn't anything that's going slower or backwards in mental illness right now. It's a problem no matter who you talk to. It's all around us. It's just important for us to talk about.
And it hasn't seemed to miss anyone. And I think when we think of trauma, we often think about someone that has experienced life-threatening situations. But COVID-19 has turned our world upside down for months now. I mean, do you realize it hit this country in January? So we're almost a year into this. We started our lockdowns in March. So this has changed, and everyone keeps talking about this being our new normal. And for so many people, that's really depressing. Thinking about having to maintain distances from people, but there's so many reasons why people are feeling trauma from this, but it has sent people around the world into an emotional turmoil. It's funny, it's not all that uncommon for me to hear people downplay the traumatic nature of our, you know, the global pandemic, because trauma has historically been associated with violent experiences, but you don't have to experience violence to experience trauma.
Absolutely. And it's a little bit like you and I were talking about, that what came first, the chicken or the egg? And
mm-hmm.
a lot of times it's our reactions to events outside that all of a sudden we start noticing effects that are happening mentally, physically within our body. And we're like, wow, this is really the result of trauma, but we didn't actually recognize it as trauma in the first place.
Right. I agree. I found that it's hitting very close to home for everyone, because I have so many people in my friend circle and in my yoga studio affected by COVID. I'm sure you do too. We have one lady that has had to self-quarantine herself, and she lives alone, but she has children that have been exposed, and her mother ended up getting COVID. So she's had to self-quarantine. She's never gotten it, but she's had to self-quarantine 3 times for 2 weeks.
No, because this just adds to like a forced depressed state.
Mm-hmm.
Lack of socialization. There is lack of movement a lot of times when we're secluded. And so it's just always even trickier when the situation forces us into a state of depression. So
mm-hmm.
ultimately we start to see those negative cycles then, and those inabilities to cope.
Yep, I completely agree. I had a friend whose brother died of a heart attack during COVID-19, and they couldn't have a funeral. And then right after they did a Zoom funeral for her brother, her mother and brother and sister-in-law all were diagnosed with COVID. They live 3 states away, and her mother's older and has a lot of health issues. issues anyway. So she felt just so helpless. There was nothing she could do. And she kept thinking, you know, I'll never see my brother again. I didn't get to see him when he was in the hospital when he died. And now my mother may die. And it doesn't seem to just be affecting the older. My daughter had a real close friend whose 25-year-old sister died of COVID last month. And, you know, so it is very interesting, but all of these things just take such a huge toll emotionally on people. And it makes you kind of feel like, you know, you're looking over your shoulder to see when the next big chunk of rock's going to drop.
Yeah. And this is a component that we'll talk about when we talk about grief. But first of all, you mentioned like the inability to see people as they're passing, like, mm-hmm. right? So we can't share in that experience. We can't provide energy for them as this is happening. We have the addition of the inability to have closure when we can't have funerals where we can share that time with other family members. So now one of the things we'll talk about when we talk about grief, it's just stacking grief on top of grief. And it's almost clinical.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we like to tell ourselves, well, I'm handling it just fine, when we don't realize how much we've stacked upon stack. Mm-hmm. Right?
And a lot of times I think for people, it's easier to say they're handling it just fine and try to make themselves believe it than to actually face how they're truly feeling.
Right. Mm-hmm. Trauma is such an intense thing because, like you say, the association has such negative connotations. Like when in a normal conversation bring up trauma, people think physical abuse or physical violence, but they're not realizing that it can be the loss of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Even just getting sick yourself leaves trauma in the body. Trauma is one of those things that it's oftentimes, you know, lift up the rug and let's just sweep it underneath because we don't want to talk about it. That's mm-hmm. the opponent of it, is that, you know, it's as much as we're changing and moving mental illness into the world of open communication, it's still also very taboo for a lot of people to admit weakness or to admit they have feelings or emotions that sound like trauma because there's a stigma against victim mentality mm-hmm. and difference. Like, right, we want to encourage people to be able to talk and not feel like that victim mentality is what's, you know, hanging over them. Like they have the right to feel. Mm-hmm. What we know in psychology is that that's an important component mm-hmm. is time to feel so that you can yeah. through and beyond.
One thing I hadn't really thought about until you started mentioning that is, you know, we all have suffered traumas of different sorts in our lives, in our childhood. And when you have something like this pandemic, it can bring up old traumas too. You know, I'm writing all my body image book stuff now. And I wasn't really ready to focus on that before COVID. But because that brought up a whole lot of other feelings, it, you know, so I think that's another thing, things that'll happen to you now, not even just talking about the pandemic, but even having a car wreck. It can bring up old traumas that you had from childhood.
Absolutely. And this is very analogous with grief as well, is the theory that new grief brings up old grief, just like new trauma brings up mm-hmm. old trauma.
Yeah, very true. Another one of my yogis moved from the north down to Tennessee, and her mother was left up there. That's where she lives. And her mother went into an assisted living, and her mother's not doing very well. Well, now this happened, and my yogi has this huge burden because, you know, she's now, you know, hours and hours away from her mother in Connecticut. And she went up at Thanksgiving, but she had to have a special pass proving she didn't have COVID before she could enter the state of Connecticut. I didn't even know that was a thing. But, and now she's back up there. I just texted her this morning to check to see if her drive was safe. She has to drive because she gets on a plane. She's more apt to get exposed again. But I would imagine she has got all kinds of feelings because of not just the pandemic, but of not being there near her mother during this time when her mother's not doing well.
Yeah.
And then having to talk to her mom through a window.
Right. Well, and so this is, you know, just part of like what you're speaking of when it comes to emotional trauma is it's relative to grief, it's relative to loss, it's relative to anxiety, it's relative to fear, it's relative to anger, it's relative to shame, to guilt. I mean, there are so many levels of emotions that file right into trauma. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people don't even realize they're suffering from trauma. And that's one of the things that I think people need to be made aware of is like, what are symptoms of trauma? Like, mm-hmm. how does it show up? Right.
Right. Well, and I was looking up some additional, I mean, I see it all the time in the classes, just like you do, people that tell you that they're suffering from depression, but they can't sleep. My sister has not been able to sleep at all. Neither can my mom. How many people have you seen that have told you they've gained the COVID-19 pounds because of comfort eating, you know, so overeating, being depressed, being anxious all the time, having panic attacks, headaches, stomach aches, over shopping. Oh my goodness, Amazon's doing great during this because we're all sitting at home and every time we see something we need, we jump on Amazon and order it. It is amazing how our emotions can affect our physical selves. One of the things that I've seen with this is fear, anxiety, and stress caused by isolation, because we have most of, I would say my demographic in the studio is probably 30, the biggest group of people are 30 to 55 probably. But we have quite a few older people, and we're getting more and more older people. And a lot of them, they live alone and they have really been struggling because the only human contact they really get, you know, talking and sharing with people and feeling part of a community is at the studio. And so for them to be, you know, stuck at home, and, you know, they have been all, a few of them have been trying to Zoom. Some of them don't like technology and they're like, no, I'm not doing that. So they just sit home and just be depressed. My mother-in-law lives in South Carolina in a retirement community, and she's been alone since this started for the most part. We did go over in September, and that was, we could do a whole podcast on traveling during a time of COVID, but we drove over and picked her up and brought her to our house for a week. And she said she felt like she had been broken out of jail.
Yeah.
But she's just lonely.
I have a friend whose grandfather refers to his current, we'll say, living facility, even though it's an adult care unit, but he mm-hmm. calls it jail because it's so isolated right now. He's like, yep, I'm still in COVID jail. But that's how they're feeling, because it is, you know, it's required seclusion, and it's not by choice. You don't get to choose, well, no, today I don't feel like a visitor. It's like, no, you're not allowed a visitor.
Right.
The rights been taken away from us.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I've had some of the older people that I've dealt with that said, you know, I don't want the last year or two of my life, because some of them are older. I don't want the last few years of my life to be sitting here alone in a room with no one.
Yeah.
And I get that. But same time, it's still better than them running around without a mask on and being dead the next month.
Or, yeah. You know, us who want to be able to provide them a safe space, worrying about whether or not we're going to be the one to expose them as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's trauma too, because now that's fear. And now you've just added mm-hmm. another trauma. And it's really amazing how much trauma has really come around mm-hmm. and how now that we're in this situation, where we are all feeling less than stellar, we'll say,
mm-hmm.
where now we're trying to put words to it, right? And this is a great place for us to like introduce, you know, trauma-informed intelligence. And when you're talking to someone, are you recognizing in them, this is normal feelings, or no, this looks like this is trauma and they're truly suffering, and maybe I should lend an ear slightly more than just the average, hey, how are you doing today? Like, right?
Yeah.
No, it really needs to be, how are you feeling right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and another thing that I have noticed, people, they don't ask how they're feeling, but a lot of people have gotten afraid of people, which, you know, we try to bring in, like, you know, we're a community of acceptance and love, like all yoga studios are for the most part. You know, we really try to build communities. And we have people that, you know, if someone comes up and tries to go in for a hug, they just about have a fit, which I kind of do too. I'm like, oh yeah, hey, my space, your space. And we have everything spaced spaced out 6 feet apart at our studio. But if someone gets close to that 6 foot line, you can tell these people are just terrified that someone's going to get near them. That makes me a little sad. I mean, I understand it because I feel the same way too. If someone gets too close to my bubble, but you know, I go to the grocery store and I see people touching each other, trying to get, you know, vegetables and stuff like that. And they don't seem to be that concerned space-wise at the grocery store, but come in the yoga studio where they come to feel safe and they need nurturing. And, but then, you know, someone walks anywhere near them, they're like, ah! So that I think causes trauma. And I think a lot of that has been because, you know, the media has mentioned, you know, gyms are the least safe place to be. Well, we're not a gym and we clean nonstop, but.
Yeah. And that's a reality though. I feel like until the culture of COVID changes and the efficacy of the shots are determined and we find out how long lasting the vaccines are going to be, that culture isn't going to change, right?
That's and so, true.
Unfortunately, that's just going to be a problem for those of us who have a business that's suffering on account of closures and the likes. But to go back towards trauma, it's still in our access to reach out to people and recognize, okay, this is a sign of something. It's a little bit like when we're raising our children, there's those, you know, those red flags, like, okay, this is not a healthy behavior. I need to address this. How can I address this gently and safely without causing more trauma or worsening the situation, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for us to drive home the fact that it doesn't have to be hopeless. Like, we can talk about it. We can share it. There are means of coping. And, you know, maybe this is the perfect time to move into some of that coping because we don't want our listeners to feel like we're just, you know, giving them doom and gloom episode, right? But that, you know, we did have a plan for it. And we have the plan is that we're going to tell you there are some things you can do. And there are some healthy ways that you can, you know, work through the trauma that you're dealing
with. Well, there's a lot of strategies proven to be helpful. And there's some that you and I use all the time. Breathing exercises are, you know, wonderful. They're very helpful in calming and dealing with stress and dealing with trauma. Alternate nostril breath, Nadi Shodhana, is a fabulous breathing technique. And anyone can look alternate nostril breath up on YouTube and see how to do it. And it's so calming to the mind and it clears your mind. It balances the right and the left hemispheres of your brain. So that's a good one to try.
And it's really, really good on like your central nervous system in general. So if a person's having panic attacks or they're feeling like they're just completely out of control, using alternate nostril breathing is a really fantastic way to bring people back down to the ground. It's very grounding. It's very calming. And so, yeah, like you say, it's a very balancing breath. And so when you feel out of balance, it's a great go-to.
It helps with that hyperarousal that you feel when you're stressed and panicked.
And anxious. Yeah, absolutely.
And also the circular breath or square breath, as you teach it with the, in fact, you have to tell our listeners how you teach circular breath.
I generally teach my circle breath starting from square breath. And it's only because square breath is slightly more mechanical and maybe easier for people to understand because it's quite literally a square. You inhale for say three, hold the breath in for three, exhale out for three, and hold the breath out for three. So it's four parts: in three, hold three, out three, hold three, in three, right? Very simple pattern. And I always encourage my students to even use their eyes while their eyes are closed, if they're able to practice with their eyes closed, to visualize the inhale up the box to the left, hold across the box to the right, to exhale down the box, and then to hold out. They can see that. After they're really comfortable in that square breath, instead of focusing on the lines of the squares, I have them focus on the corners of the squares, which is really the space or the transition between the inhale and the hold, and see if they can make the transition seamless. So it's not like a square. So they're like rounding off the corners of the square. And when you get in touch with that space in the transitions, this is where you really start to get in touch with your inner truth. This is where you really start to get in touch with the divine. This is where you start to make that cosmic connection. It's not within the lines of the breath, but in the spaces between the lines. And so now the more that we can round the corners of our square, the more we can turn it into a circle. And this is where circle breath becomes such a really connected place.
Mm-hmm. How many rounds do you have people do of this? 2 to 5?
So I tend to be a timer kind of girl.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I try to be within a breath, shooting for 9 minutes, 11 minutes.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I usually go with just, you know, set a little ding timer, like, or you can use a chime, you know, just so that it's just this gentle sound. You set the timer and breathe. You don't have to think about anything until you hear the ding.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And wouldn't you say for people that don't want to focus on Nadi Shodhana or circle breath or square breath, even if they just find a quiet place to sit down and feel supported and just take the time to focus on breathing in and out deeply, that's still going to be beneficial to them.
Absolutely. Breath awareness is such a huge piece. And for people who are like, I don't even know what that means. You know, sure you do. Notice the breath as it feels going into your body. Notice the breath as it feels leaving your body. And really try and focus on nasal breathing. We have a world of mouth breathers out there. And although mouth breathing has its purpose, if you can really try and soften, seal the lips and breathe through the nose so that you're watching the breath go up in towards the back and all the way down to the belly and then watch the breath leave again. That's a huge connection, even if you're not counting, even if you're not trying to apply any sort of yogic pranayama or breath control, just purely observation of the breath is a huge connection.
It can bring the blood pressure down. It can help ease the anxiety almost immediately if you'll just stop and slow down.
Yeah, it wasn't by accident the expression was stop and count to 10.
Very true. Well, another coping technique that might be beneficial for people that are experiencing trauma is to get a hobby. It kind of sounds cliche, but it occupies your mind, especially if you go back to something that you enjoyed a lot in your past, because you have those positive thoughts of that hobby in the forefront of your mind.
Absolutely. And it doesn't even have to be an expensive hobby. It's not like we're talking about, you know, become a collector and start spending, you know, gajillions of dollars. We're just talking about sometimes just picking up marker coloring crayons and coloring.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, of course, another coping technique that you and I both love is meditation. There's so many things. I think a lot of times during trauma, people are a little afraid of meditation because of the stillness and the quiet. It gives their mind a place to run. But good things come from the stillness of our mind. You know, you can spend time doing positive affirmations if you don't want to completely clear your mind, or progressive muscle relaxation. And you can look up those kind of things.
Continuing like that thought of meditation, there's, you know, mantras, there's apps out there if you're afraid to just sit with yourself, where you can have guided meditations. There's, you know, support your local studio and check out whether or not they have YouTube channels. We have a channel and some of our classes are specific to meditation. You go on our Facebook Live, we've got a few recordings that were meditations, or just talk to someone you know who has a meditation practice and ask if you can just sit within a Zoom space with them, so you're both being quiet together. And although maybe you're not in the same room, it's still twice as powerful. You know, it's the old theory where two or more are gathered.
Exactly. And even if you just sit quietly and just start stating things you're grateful for, that helps to ease the stress and the anxiety a lot, because then you realize, wow, you know, I'm stressed about this, but I have all these things I'm grateful for. And for a lot of people, that really does help calm them down and balance it out a little.
Absolutely. Gratitude meditations are a very powerful tool, and it leads right into mindfulness and mindful practices. And, you know, even if it's just something as simple as emptying the dishwasher or washing your dishes, and with every dish you pick up, you quietly reiterate to yourself, I'm thankful for the water. I'm thankful for the soap. I'm thankful mm-hmm. for this dish. I'm thankful for the food I ate on it or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. because we forget how precious those commodities are because we take them for granted. And yeah. when we get into a space of gratitude, it's really hard for us to be spending time being angry. It changes mm-hmm. our outlook.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. Another thing that's helpful is just staying in touch with people, especially staying connected to people that you trust. And don't be afraid to let them know that you need to talk or that you just need to hear someone else talk, that you just need to be and have that human contact, even if it's on the phone. It doesn't have to be in person.
Yeah. And it's really tricky sometimes for people to ask for that when they need it, but it's such an important piece, right?
I think people that tend to be sensitive to others, a lot of times you can tell when someone needs that. We get real busy with our world. So maybe for those of us that maybe aren't dealing as much with trauma right now, just being a little more aware of who's around us and who might need just, you know, someone to listen to them for 2 or 3 minutes.
Right. And then you think about as like yoga teachers and, you know, studio owners, that it's a very important piece for us to be able to provide that safe space for mm-hmm. someone to simply sit in silence and not be alone.
Exactly. Yeah, it's, I think that's very powerful. And speaking of the studio, you know, finding a group that you can connect with is very beneficial when you're dealing with trauma or grief. But it doesn't have to be a yoga studio. It could be a book club or a walking group. It could be my mother-in-law, I mentioned that she's been so isolated. We introduced her to Words with Friends. She has this whole community of people that she never sees, but it's so important to her. She feels like that she's interacting with people every day, just having that community there.
Something to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. And you did tell me yesterday when we were talking about some of the strategies before we recorded today, you said, are you really not going to mention journaling? And because we know I'm just the little journaling queen here, but journaling is a wonderful way to get stress out of your body and your mind and put those stressors down on paper. So you can use your journal as a stress dump site, put the stresses down that you're feeling and just get them all out of your head and your heart and your body and put them on the paper. And sometimes those traumas or stresses are too private to let anyone else stumble upon. So tear up the paper and dump it, but use that journal as just you might even have a journal and call it your dump journal. Use that whenever you're feeling anxious or stressed and just dump all the junk there. That doesn't mean you're not going to pick it back up later, but try to get it out of your mind and your head and your heart.
Right. It's purging. And when mm-hmm. we can purge, it's helpful. Like we talk about that, you know, in our yoga practice, is that we're trying mm-hmm. to get into these spaces where we have stuck trauma, where we have stuck grief, so that we can sort of pry it out. And mm-hmm. part of that journaling process, it's very cathartic in being able to purge it out and, you know, get it out of the system. Right. Mm-hmm. Because the more we hold on to it, the more toxins we're creating, the higher the hormone levels are that we're creating. Our cortisol goes up, serotonin goes down. These are all relative to stress levels. It's all relative to anxiety levels. And what we really need is to increase the response of joy, increase mm-hmm. the response of feeling loved and feeling safe so that we get the proper hormone balance.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. Another thing I do is I use tapping. I do that a lot just for myself, but I taught a yin yoga class Sunday online. And we spent quite a while tapping the thalamus. It was just wonderful. But for people that are not familiar with tapping, you can look up emotional freedom technique or EFT, and it's an alternate treatment for physical or emotional distress. It's referred to as tapping or psychological acupressure. And people that use this, to include myself, and you said you use tapping also, believe that tapping can create a balance in the energy system to help do a whole podcast on tapping.
Like we could add in Reiki, we could add in Chinese medicine and the meridians and connecting the flow and all of the acupressure points or reflexology mm-hmm. or cranial sacral release. Like all of these are, you hear people say hippie uh-huh. sort of medicine, but it's not. It's natural homeopathic medicine we can do for ourselves in our house as our first line of defense, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Well, in fact, right before I had my mammogram in November, I called you up and asked if you would do a Reiki session with me online. And I still feel calm from that. It's amazing. I still want another one though. So any of our listeners that need an amazing Reiki session, hit Tanya up. She's amazing. But you know, that's something that people, even if they're isolated, they find a Reiki practitioner or hit Tanya up and have a virtual Reiki session. I was really surprised. And I think my favorite thing that came out of that session, and I'm kind of digressing here, but was when you told me that I would feel pressure on my right shoulder and I felt pressure on my left shoulder. I was like, okay, that was weird. And then when we went over it afterwards, you said, oh my gosh, I felt so silly. I said right shoulder, I meant left. And I was, and it just kind of flipped me out because I felt it where you meant it. And so
that was an anomaly because I was in my mind while giving you the session, looking at you from the right side of your body. But in my mind, I was standing on your left. So when I said it, I said the wrong shoulder. Uh-huh. So I'm glad that you felt it in the right place. And that's the amazing part of Reiki is it transcends time and distance. And it's always for the greater good of uh-huh. the, you know, participants. So it doesn't even matter if my hands were at your feet. If my intention was to send it through your shoulder, it would definitely be at your shoulder. Mm-hmm. It's very powerful. Yeah. So just a question for you. Have you ever taught a trauma-informed yoga class?
I have not, but I've been doing a little research on this for this podcast. I really want to. And I've got a book on yoga for trauma. And I would like, I've had people approach me about that, but I never quite felt comfortable with that fine line between I am a yoga instructor, I'm not a therapist, but I would like to explore it a lot more now.
So I have. Mm-hmm. And like you said, I felt very nervous about it, but I learned really quickly that, you know, maybe it's that same sort of intentionality of Reiki is that if your intention is pure, you can't go wrong, like, mm-hmm. right? But I had a relationship with one of the homeless shelters here in the community, and it was their teen center, and mm-hmm. they had asked me to be part of a weekend sort of celebration. They were having all of the kids do an open house and come in, and they were, you know, having free access to shopping for food and for clothing, blankets, bedding, whatever they needed. And then they were doing some classes, and part of those classes was some yoga classes. And it's very interesting because now we're talking, you know, rather deep-seated trauma, because some of those kids that were coming in, some were chemical dependent, some of them were not, some of them were literally coming in with all of their possessions in the bags they mm-hmm. had with them. So it was an experience because there was a level of awareness that I needed to change my entire line of thinking. It wasn't take off your shoes and socks and put your feet on the mat, because these people are like, no, these are my only shoes. And I don't know if I trust that you'll take my shoes. You know what I mean? Right. So it was a very different sort of class. There was no close your eyes, because closing eyes is just not a safe place.
Yeah.
And so the awareness was, you know, completely different. But again, the intentionality was still there. Like I was trying to teach from a place of self-love. I was trying to teach from a place of compassion and equality. And so it was very well received, mm-hmm. but it was not how I teach in a regular classroom setting. Mm-hmm. And so it was very different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful, I think, for them, but really powerful for me as a learning.
Well, what a wonderful gift to give back to that community in particular, but to anyone that's suffering with trauma.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something I want to look into.
Yeah, you know, and there are so many trainings out there available. And this is maybe a segue just for yoga teachers and, you know, yoga studios, is there really are a lot of trainings out there available for grief training, for trauma training, for how to handle abuse, or like you look at, you know, cancer training. I mean, there's trainings out there for lineages, and it's really important before you actually try and tackle it to get some of that knowledge ahead of time so that mm-hmm. you're not walking into a situation that you feel very uncomfortable.
I agree. I did have a couple of other coping techniques that might be helpful. One thing, very easy, is just reading, you know, finding uplifting books to read. One that we did in my 500-hour training that I love is Anatomy of the Spirit. And I think that's a wonderful book And you know, I've got quite a few books on EFT, on tapping. A book as far as for yoga instructors, but not necessarily just for instructors, but it's called Soul to Soul, Poems and Prayers and Stories to End a Yoga Class, but they're all short. And so we live in such a fast-paced society. It's like a fabulous little book to have, you know, you can get a little short burst and read it and be done in each one. They're all standalone. So that's something nice.
I think adding to that list of books is the Meditation for Healing is a great book too, because again, they're just short bits about meditation, and it can be both your book and your meditation. So you'd be able to read just a snippet on a meditation and then sit down and focus on what you just read.
And that's the Larry Moen book?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One other one I had on my list was Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. That would just makes me giggle, but it's such a good self-helpy type book to get you focused on something that's not negative.
It's a simpler read. It's lighthearted. It makes you giggle and it makes you think a little bit. But, you know, as you go through it, you're like, oh, I do have possibilities. There is hope for me.
Some other things that are pretty, most of us already know these coping tools: exercise regularly, get plenty of sleep, eat healthy meals, seek professional help when you need it. And don't watch, this is a big one for me, don't watch the news 24 hours a day. We've got that 24-hour news cycle. And if you're struggling with any kind of, and all news is not negative, but if you're struggling with trauma, the last thing you need to do is watch a 24-hour news cycle.
A big thing too, and I think it's important to mention, you know, it's just like with any sort of habit or any sort of change that we're trying to make in our life, is recognizing what the triggers are. So if you're going on Facebook and you're noticing that it's just creating anxiety for you, or that it's setting you off or making you angry, then there's a little lesson right there that maybe you should be avoiding some of that social media that's a trigger for you. And it's real. Like, what are the triggers? If sitting and watching, you know, some violent TV before you go to bed means that during the night you're reliving the episode you just watched on Netflix, and so now you're not sleeping as well as you could be because, you know, whatever spiders were crawling over the dead zombie body are now crawling all over you while you sleep. This is not a great coping tool.
Right.
And although it feels like a diversion while you're watching it, if it's destroying your sleep pattern, it's not a good diversion. So really recognizing those triggers. And sometimes it's simple as grabbing a notebook and watching yourself for a week. What are the things that set you off during the week? And recognizing honestly, oh, you know, that's really true. When I had that, you know, 3 cookies before bed, I didn't sleep that night. Mm-hmm. So maybe I should be avoiding that sugar hit before bed, right? It's really convicting to admit that those are the things we know are really causing our triggers.
Well, there's some apps you can find. I did that talk not too long ago on time management, and there are some apps you can find to do time audits, and that would probably be very beneficial, where you just regularly pinpoint what you're doing, and you can track that with your emotions and how you're feeling too. So that might be something that people would, if they do want to track that and see what they were doing right before bed, or what triggered them in the middle of the day, if they do a time audit app.
Right. That'd be a great tool. Absolutely. Well, and I think, you know, you and I are great resources. If people have questions or comments, please, you know, let us know. This is what we love to do, is to help people. And I think you and I talked about this yesterday, is that this is really what our lives are driving towards, is that this is what we want to be doing for people, is creating awareness, talking about what there are safe options for us, whether it's, you know, coping from trauma, or like when we get into grief, coping from grief, or whether it's just simply, I put on weight and I want some assistance on getting the weight off, or I just have noticed that my gut has always been off. What can I do? Like, this is the journey that you and I are on. And I think it's just really important for us to continue to keep this line of communication open.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And finding ways to help connect people with people in their communities, even, that might be helpful to them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this was an absolutely great episode. I look really forward to us talking about grief. I look forward to us, you know, continuing to help share great information with our listeners.
Yeah, I do too. It always makes you feel good when you think you might be reaching out and touching even one person, making their day better.
Right. Even if only one person heard us.
Exactly. Or 1 million. Who knows?
Well, I mean, one person heard us. We're going to have 1 million listeners, but maybe only one person's going to actually hear it.
True. Oh, you took it down a whole different layer. You're peeling that onion, aren't you?
Lay layers, baby. I'm all about the layers. Well, thank you again, Kat, for sharing all the information. I just truly appreciate it.
I am Kat Kahn.
And I am Tanya Rice.
And this is Two Pittas
on a Pod, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Two Pittas on a Pod. We're grateful you joined us. We hope you'll join us again for more musings of a couple of yogis.
We hope you learned, laughed, and enjoyed this podcast. And we hope you will share your comments or questions.